Off the Ball Rugby.
There is no price, there's no World Cup, there's nothing that can replace your health. There's nothing bigger in the game of rugby than keeping your players safe.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Welcome back. Friday morning's Off the Ball Breakfast. Delighted to be joined in studio by Barry Murphy. Barry, yeah, good morning.
Thanks for having me.
All-Shamrock Rovers needed was for Shells to win the league last year, and they've come back with a vengeance. They're walking the league, and now they're flying it in Europe.
Yeah, you've prodded the animal there, haven't you? Like, I think Steve.
What a win.
It was unbelievable. To be fair, the first leg was dour. We were commentating on it. It was trying to put any sort of enthusiasm into it. A couple of chances for Josh Honan, but they looked a decent outfit over there in Kosovo. Totally different animal last night. Came out on fire on the front foot. First 20 minutes kind of got through the game, and then you just felt they were always building into the game, and Gaffney the goal disallowed just before it.
Just offside, wasn't he?
Yeah, just offside, and then got a little bit angered by the left back was in his ear.
What was happening there?
There was a chance just before. Gaffney pulled back onto the left. Defender got in to Puku, left back, and got a good block, and it went right up into Gaffney's face. And the corner came in 10 minutes later, Gaffney got to do it back to him. So that's karma has a way, or football has a way of throwing it back in your face if you kind of mess with it a little bit like that. So he was exceptional last night.
So not quite the swan song in his career, but 35 years old, Gaffney looked lethal last night. So he has this low goal. Poacher's goal for the first one. Second one is a beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. We're getting a bit nostalgic this morning, Barry, and it was breaking a Lee Sharp against Barcelona.
Yeah. He was class now, to be fair. And you look at him last season, he wasn't in that European squad at all. He was left out of it with the injury. 35-year-old, had to take a pay cut at the start of the year to stay at Rovers. He'd Souters and Galway and a couple of, I think Derry were in for him as well, a couple of other teams, and you're thinking is the career on the wind down now. And this season, he's just been the talisman. Mm. Without him, he scored the big goals in some of the big games, and he's the one that's kind of grabbed it by the scruff of the neck last night. And his performance last night is probably one of the best I've seen from an Irish side in Europe.
Shows a lot of character, doesn't it, from Gaffney, when you consider the contract situation last year and all the injuries, as you say, that he's had to deal with. It just seems like a really nice lad. You can hear it from the interview even with Jonathan Higgins there after the match last night. But the hurdles that he's had to jump over, particularly to get back to this point, is quite remarkable.
Yeah, and an ankle injury as well. And he's had surgery on it. And to come back at 35 as well, to put in that work, to have that graft, to have that inner belief that he can come back from in a squad as big as Rovers, you look at maybe Jack Byrne's situation now, and you're thinking look at the quality of players. They brought in McGovern as well, didn't bring in another centre forward as well, so did have the belief that he could get back to a standard, but he's excelled that now.
Josh Honahan, that finish, that looping volley, and it was perfectly timed on Hamer Helgemson in the stands. And when he got called into that squad as the League of Ireland representative last time out, I remember we were asking you yourself, and I was like, well, is that not quite political or just box ticking, but is he genuinely the best player in the league? And I don't know what last night did to add to that opinion one way or the other.
To be fair, Josh, in the games that Hamer Helgemson has been at, hasn't been great. He's kind of come off a little bit, but in the last two games over there, as I said, he was a standout player. He's exceptional for set pieces. Last night he was a different level. He was just making it look like a schoolboy right back when he was going up against. He was just knocking it 10 yards ahead of him, getting to the boil and getting crosses in. That finish is a phenomenal finish. We were screaming. Are you watching Hamer Helgemson on the commentary? And he was cutting out when I went up online, but he was in the crowd, and just everyone, he got up everyone off their seats when he gets the ball ahead and knocks it away. He's got something a little different that we don't have in the Irish setup at the moment. And he's potent from set piece as well, but that finish, to take it down, goalkeeper punches it out to the edge of the box. The finish to see the awareness to know it has to go over the goalkeeper. No one's on the line and into the top corner. It's just phenomenal stuff.
It kind of would make you wonder even more about the first leg, but maybe that's just the case in Europe, that travelling and especially playing those difficult teams away from home can be just a completely different kettle of fish, because we all kind of expected. We were all whispering a little bit, but we knew Rovers should still progress, even though they were 1-0 down. They weren't getting ahead of themselves, but it would make you wonder about the first leg. But maybe it is just a case that away from home in Europe is difficult.
They've done that the last couple of seasons going away from Europe as well. You look at Iceland last year in the first round of the Champions League, went over 0-0, and you're thinking a 0-0 against an Icelandic team in the Champions League, you've got to be getting a better result than that to bring back to Tala. But the way they're going up, they're set up now with Mali in the middle over there as well. They're set up to just not concede, bring it back to Tala. They know how potent they are here. If you score a goal, great. And listen, they were playing St. Joseph's in the round before it, and the tie was done after the first leg, totally different level. But they're set up now to play in Europe, keep things tight, bring it back, because they fancy themselves. Went to Celje last year, a really good team. Albert Riera managing them, got beaten 1-0 At the time, Leon Poles had a great game, similar to Ed McGinty last week, kept him in it, beat them 3-1 at home. So they do find themselves at home once the thing isn't too far out of reach.
You mentioned the Gaffney issues with the defender during the game. I think he was saying afterwards, like, he gave me a bit and he was standing on my toes at different points throughout. Yeah. Like that, I presume that that's... I haven't played football at the top level, you know, like, standing on toes is a common enough trick. I'm sure even for yourself, from corner kicks and that sort of thing, it's regular.
Yeah, that's probably the least thing that goes on in the box. There'd be fingers going everywhere.
Yeah.
It's just mad. A bunch of 20 lads in that small area, all sorts going on, verbals going on. Kind of, you used to love the FAI Cup games, you got a non-league team, the stuff that you said then, like, you had to give a bit back as well, like, it's all good. But as I said, kind of karma always gets you in football at some stage, and it came fairly quick for that guy about 10 minutes later.
Yeah.
Were you one to give back?
Oh yeah, you have to. I was a small goalkeeper. Like, the stuff I was getting, like, 5'10" goalkeeper in this league, and then listen, it was mad stuff, like, about your wages, about your height, about family members, everything. And that was like from the crowd as well.
I was going to say, that's just the crowd, not the opposition. Because you have to stand there when it's the away crowd behind you. Like, because I know for like Turner's Cross, it's a nightmare for the opposition goalkeeper in the shed end. Because you just have to stand there and to listen to that crowd.
And Talk Park as well. Like, there's lads literally 2 feet away hanging over with chips and over and just take a chip. Like, just kind of nullified it all. But you can't get away from it. Like, at least with Talla, they're a little bit away from you. But most of the other grounds are right on top of you.
What is it about Stephen Bradley and this Shamrock Rovers side that look comfortable in Europe, we've seen the last year?
It's a back catalogue of getting beaten well in Europe. They've learned their lessons. Like, Ferencvaros got beaten 4-0, 6-1 on aggregate. They've taken their beatings. Ludogorets as well. They've had to learn their lessons. Really conceded soft goals. And that's kind of where it's come to now, where you do go away from home and you keep it tight. They're not compounding errors. They're not going from 1-0 to suddenly 3 or 4-0 and the game's out of sight. Similar to Pats at home against Beşiktaş. Some of the goals they concede, you're just going, just take your medicine, bring it home and give yourself a second chance. And that's where they've learned. They've kept themselves in tight. They always fancy themselves to score at home. But it is that accumulation of a couple of years in Europe.
Clean sheets as well, particularly, like, obviously his goalkeeper will be mad keen for these, but like, that'll have impressed Stephen Bradley more than anything. You know, in a European game, to get a clean sheet against any sort of opposition is a difficult enough thing to do. And that'll be possibly one of the more pleasing things.
Yeah, and it's 5 in the last 6 as well, clean sheets. And you look at Ed McGinty coming into as well. It's a pressurised situation where they've had such longevity in Alan Manus coming in. But it's the back five now. You've got the same back five, the same goalkeeper. There's that solidity every week. You know what you're dealing with. And he struggled with it the first couple of games of the season. The last season as well, gave away the Molde goal when he first came in. Kind of just didn't know the distances between him and Pico Lopez and Lee Grace and Dan Cleary, but now they have that settled and he's just such a presence back there, and he's doing the simple things right and come up with the big saves as well. So he looks like a good addition. Yeah.
Next up, Santa Clara, Portugal. They finished 5th in the Portuguese top division last campaign. This would be a different kettle of fish, and in between that then they have the FAI Cup this weekend against Longford. So you imagine there'll be a raft of changes, but the FAI Cup is massive as well, because if you win it, there's a big reward.
Yeah, and I think it's something, like, any time it comes up now, Stephen's talking more fervently about it, because it's been so long since they've gone and done anything in it. Like, they've been knocked out fairly early in the last couple of rounds. Well, like, they've drawn bows a couple of times, which hasn't helped. But, like, that they're looking like they're going to go and win the league anyway, so they're going to guarantee that Champions League spot. But the Europa League, just everyone's in it now. Like, the big teams are really looking at it going, what a chance to get into Europe. And starts again on Sunday against Longford, but you do feel to be a raft of change, but there's quality everywhere. You're just looking at what comes off the bench last night, and Graham Burke will get more minutes hopefully going into that and into the game next week.
So some of the key players in the final third, you imagine, will be rested this weekend. So does that mean that Stephen Bradley looks around the squad and says, Jack, you're back in? What's going on there with Jack Byrne and Stephen Bradley?
It just happens. I'd say the amount of stuff that goes on behind closed doors up there with that amount of talent. And this is the only one that's leaked out. And it's leaked out 2 weeks later, which is a little bit better, obviously.
Yeah, it was the August bank holiday that happened.
Yeah, well, like, I've been there. Like, I heard Vinny talking about it yesterday. It's the 11v11 is a nightmare if you're not in that squad. And as a goalkeeper as well, you knew if you was touching God whether you were playing, as soon as the jerseys or the bibs are down the pitch, you know if you're in or not, and your head is gone. The last thing you want to be doing is playing shadow play, as playing as a player for the opposition. Yeah. And then you just go in and do set pieces. You have to do everything as if you're the opposition player. It's the last thing you want to do. And I'm sure words were exchanged then. I'm sure if you could take them back, I'd say he probably would at this stage, but he's made his bed a little bit. But there's a good relationship between him and Jack. You brought him back from Limassol as well. There's a good relationship there that I think it can be repaired. But Jack's got to realise what he's got around him. Matt Healy, Danny Mandreau, Watts, Burke, O'Neill, he's got quality around him. So he's not going to be the standout player. And his performances just haven't been to a level where that guarantees you. And nobody's the first name on the team sheet at Shamrock Rovers anymore. And that's the environment and culture he's built.
Jonathan Higgins asked Stephen Bradley after the match about this, and he was very short and curt with it. He said, "We've just had a phenomenal performance by the players. That's all I'll be speaking about." Didn't want to reference the Jack Byrne thing, fairly understandably, at all. You'd wonder, if Jack does leave, if he does leave the club, and I know there was interest was it a couple of years ago from Charlotte and the MLS, and there was talk that Jack wanted to leave at that point. Will he stay in the League of Ireland? Shells and Pats have been two clubs that have popped into conversations over various times. But can you see him playing for another club in the League of Ireland?
It's hard to see where he does go. I can't see him travelling to Derry. I just don't see it. And Astro for him, he's struggled with injuries as well. Only played half the games this season, has been in and out with injuries, and he's been consistent in those kind of injuries as well over the last season and a bit. So would he play for Shells? I don't know if tactically they're set up for a Jack Byrne. You're kind of changing things around to fit him into your team. So this Pats maybe, Stephen would love to have somebody like him in his team, wouldn't you? And probably they're the ones that could afford him and would splash the cash for a player like him. But listen, I don't think his career at Shamrock Rovers is done. With the games coming up, he's going to want to be involved, and it's just a matter of getting it sorted.
The problem that Jack Byrne has is not quite unique, but it is a little different to most players in that he's so gifted that he knows, or he certainly probably still believes, that on his day he's the best player in the country. And like you say, he's fulfilled a role where he's pretending to be the opposition, and it must be soul destroying for a player like that. All Stephen Bradley cares about, though, in the other side, is the collective. And like he's come out this week, Stephen Bradley, and said a comment that really won't help Jack Byrne. Is like, for me, Graham Burke, Matt Heaney and Dawson Devoy have been the best players in the country this year by a country mile. And that last part, even that sentence, just to double down on the fact that it's those three.
Yeah.
And Jack Byrne will be sitting there thinking, but I'm better than all of those players.
It's loaded, isn't it? It's like, you look, they're all in his position. You're talking
and
about.
And it's strategic by Stephen Bradley.
Yeah, everything. There's not a lot Stephen does that isn't tactical or strategic. And if you're thinking, if you're Jack and you're sitting there going, I've watched him over the last couple of games as well, played in that Wexford FAI Cup game, and you're thinking, we've got Derry coming up in the league. You've got these big European nights coming up for it. If I'm playing in this game, I'm not involved in them. He played 70-odd minutes in that game as well. And you're thinking, Jack on his day, absolutely phenomenal. Love watching him playing. And when he's brilliant, he's absolutely brilliant. But he's not had enough of on his days in the last couple of years for me to warrant a place where you can knock on the manager's door and go, I need to be starting. Mm. And there's other players around him now that are stepping up. You just look at even the players coming in. Last night, they were excellent. Where'd you fit him in last night? I think every one of them were brilliant. So Graham Burke is probably frustrated. Didn't play enough minutes last night either. Stephen Bradley is setting it up as the Graham Burke show for this second leg. Doesn't start and brings him on when the game is done and dusted. And you're probably thinking, from his point of view, a little bit frustrated. But you've got to manage these players and got to manage their minutes. And every player wants to play, and it's up to the manager to handle out how many minutes they play.
Because of the standard of this Portuguese opposition, is there a temptation for Stephen Bradley to put him on the squad just because of Jack Byrne's experience in Europe? However limited it is, it's more than most in the squad.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. It's just about getting it over the
line. You'd have to apologise, basically, wouldn't you?
Of course you will, and you'll have to apologise in front of everyone. And that's the way it is. And if he's willing to do that, if it is a bust up on the pitch like that, you can have your apologies to the manager, and that apology will be before you go out and do it. I don't know whether he's training with them or not. Been seeing it down through the years with Stephen Rice and Pat Scully, and we watch him training with the kids over in the corner. And it took Pat to leave the team for Stephen to come back into it, and that's not going to happen at Rovers. So it's going to have to be an apology to the manager. It's going to have to be standing in front of your peers and explaining why you did certain things, and apologising, seeking forgiveness. And players will always just forgive. They'll wipe it under the mat. Everyone has had their fallouts with managers, and hopefully that happens in this case with him and Stephen.
Did you ever have a fallout with the manager?
Loads of them, yeah.
Really?
I was playing at Shamrock Rovers, and Michael O'Neill came in. I was doing really well, and then Alan Manus was brought in, and then I was told it's going to be 50-50. You play your games, you play well, you stay in the team. A game later, I was out of the team. Obviously, head's gone. And
had you done anything in that game?
Nothing particularly bad. That weren't being dropped, but you know as well as when they bring in another goalkeeper as well, there's never competition in goalkeepers. There's one goalkeeper, there's a hierarchy to this thing, and even in training, the number one goalkeeper goes first with volleys, things like number two comes in. Woodstock changes and the wind changes, you know yourself. My head was gone then, and I started looking elsewhere and on moved at the end of the season, and that's the way it was. But I had meetings with Michael at the time, and listen, we hashed it out then, and it kind of only when I was left, he kind of brought up stuff that was in that meetings that weren't said and things, and that's the way it goes. It's not going to be the same case here, but managers will always protect themselves and protect their team over the individual.
Would this be a mature like disagreement between adults, or would there be emotion put to it and voices raised? How does it work in your instance?
No, it's emotional.
Right.
It's reactive, and that's what I'm saying about rolling back. Maybe you'll say things at the time, and when you're driving home and the blood pressure's dropped a little bit, you go, oh geez, why did I say that? Mm-hmm. And you nearly want to ring them straight away and go, listen, this is what I meant by that. It's getting the right words out at the right time and doing it at the right time. And when it's 11v11 and you know you're not in that squad, You demonstrate it on the pitch with your actions and your words on the pitch, and that's probably the issue that Stephen has. If he comes up and has a go at him in the dressing room or in the manager's room, probably not a big issue, it's left in there. But once it's involved with everyone, you've got to deal with it then. And to be fair, they've done really well to keep it in house until now.
So the goalkeeper conundrum is an interesting one. So like Manchester City signed James Trafford, so what does that mean? Because you said there's only one goalkeeper. I don't know what's happening with Ederson, and Gianluigi Donnarumma is linked with them as well. Mm-hmm. And the same with Arsenal. So like, does Kepa go to Arsenal knowing that he's definitely going to be the number two behind David Raya?
Yeah. He's gone. No, he's going to be. Well, like, he's been bouncing around teams the last couple of years. No, he's going
to
be.
He's Bournemouth's first choice last season.
Yeah, but like, if Arsenal come calling, like, you think, oh, I have a chance of winning things here, but are you really winning things as a number two as well? Do you want to look at Kelleher? Do you want to go out and play? How many of those league titles does he think actually was involved? It's different for Kelleher because he's played a few games, but like, there is a hierarchy to goalkeepers, and like, it's three or four, a run of three or four games before you're drafted as a goalkeeper, especially a good quality goalkeeper. You're not just making one mistake and being dropped out of the team, and I just don't see that there.
How do you get back in as a goalkeeper? Because you're not going to be brought on for 10 minutes at the end of a game to see it out.
Yeah.
And you can only do so much in training because it's just not comparable to a match. So you have to rely on your teammate and possibly your buddy playing badly in order for you to get back in.
You want to win 4-3 every week. That's the way it goes as a sub goalkeeper. You want to win the games, but you've got to concede goals. It's a horrible feeling as well, like, because you want to get in and play, but as you said, they have to do something to get them out of the team for you to get back in, barring an injury or illness or lack of form, and that's the only way you get back in. And it's hard to do, and there is, to be fair, as much as people talk about it, there is this little group of goalkeepers, because you know it's such a cerebral position as well, that if you do make mistakes, how much that affects you and your performance and your life off the pitch. So there's some sympathy there for a number two goalkeeper as well, knowing what a number one is going through. But again, you have to want them to go through it to play if you want to be that number one goalkeeper.
I often wondered that about, you know, say a sub goalkeeper sitting on the bench and they're watching their teammate, the number one choice, having a horrendous day, say two or three howlers. Like, and obviously the number two goalkeeper is very close to the number one keeper. They train together. They're possibly friends off the pitch as well. Like, are you genuinely sitting there feeling for them a little bit, or is there a little clenched fist underneath the seat? Like, when that's happening, are you half delighted? I know it's hard to say it.
No, you can't. As I said, it is a position where, like, you do feel for them a lot, but again, like, the selfish person in me wants to play, so for that to happen, he's got to have his bad moments. And I've been through that, so probably down through the years, and I probably became better in the latter stage of my career. I was more friendly with the goalkeepers, but at the start, I was competitive. I'd go in, I'd have my conversations, I'd talk, but I keep my distance as well, because I wanted that competitiveness for my own head. I didn't want to fall into a position where I'm going to end up as a number two. I want to be number one, so for me to be at my prime, I needed to have that little bit of bite about me. So I had my pleasantries when I needed it, but yeah, I wanted to be number one, so I had to be at that level.
Cullen mentioned Donnarumma there. Obviously, the PSG days numbered, but like, unbelievable keeper. Like, where would you rank him, and where would you see him as potentially ending up? Because obviously, City, he's been linked with Manchester United as well. We've seen the Onana issues there, but quality keeper and could end up in the Premier League.
Yeah, like, if I was United, I'd be going all out to get him.
Yeah.
It's madness that they're not. Like, Onana's come back into training in the last week or two, and he's nowhere near the level of Onana. Like, why are you sticking with him? And Bayinder, the number two, isn't good enough either. So like they're looking at Emi Martinez trying to get him on the cheap. It all seems to be on the cheap for United at the moment. Can we get players in and fill gaps or paid over 8 years, 9 years and stuff like that? Just go. Like it's such an important position, especially for United. The goals they conceded last season, just get him done, get him in. Like I think.
Can you tell by a goalkeeper immediately?
No.
Because Vicario with Spurs had a great first season and a bad second season.
You grow into the position. Josh Keighley at Pats, looking at him, thinking, really good young keeper, had good qualities, had things about him that probably wasn't at the level, got nowhere near the Pats first team when I was there. I went back in when Vítězslav Jaros came in. I'd retired a year and was brought back in to be number two, to give competition and kind of help feet. He was a young keeper coming to Pats, but Josh wasn't anywhere near that number one spot at the moment and at the time. And then got to move to Spurs, and just looking at him now, how much he's grown into position. Like he's an Ireland call up waiting to happen now, really. It's the same with a couple of other keepers as well. It takes a couple of years, and that's probably the beauty of the goalkeeper. It is, you can go into your late 30s, but it takes that. You don't see many really young goalkeepers getting starts now.
Yeah. We should have heard Pats as well last night. Like, hell of a performance to go out there, like 4-1 down from the first day, go to Turkey, score a couple of goals against Beşiktaş. Really impressive. Ultimately, it wasn't enough, but. Like, what does that say about Stephen Kenny's side, who we've often questioned their mentality of domestically this season?
That's the performance we were expecting in Tala. We mentioned last week about we thought something might happen in Tala that night with them and Beşiktaş, because with Stephen Kenny's teams, they just go for it in Europe and it seems to suit them. But the goals they gave up in that first leg were so poor that it rolled off the second leg. But listen, they were brilliant last night. To score three goals against Beşiktaş in any tie over the two legs was phenomenal. And listen, they're 2-0 up away from home in Beşiktaş. It was crazy last night, and you look at the quality they do have. But
now, is that because the pressure's off to an extent, or would you be more praiseworthy of them because they went out there and actually proactively played?
No, I'd be more praiseworthy. I think if the pressure was on, I think they could still find those goals over there. It was just such a poor performance at home. The game was over after half an hour. Really poor goals conceded, and that's a team that with Irish teams in Europe, they concede really poor goals at times and don't give themselves a chance to go and win games. But you look like that's obviously the beauty of the Champions route with Chelsea and Rovers with the coefficient. Like, to come up against Beşiktaş in the third round is not easy, obviously, for Pats, but thought they performed admirably over the two legs, certainly the last two thirds of it.
I make no apologies for repeating this point, but it's ridiculous that the game, Shamrock Rovers game, was invisible for most of the country.
Yeah, it is. Like, it's great for us. We got to do it last night.
Thank God for yourselves covering it. And for News Talk, for ourselves covering the Shellers game and commentary on Tuesday too. But beyond that, we're just talking about a game like you're just reading a report and imagining it for the vast majority of people out there.
Like, it was shown worldwide last night, LOI TV, the stream, bar Kosovo, where the national broadcaster showed it. And like, you looked at the first game over there as well, the crowds weren't great at it, but it's been shown.
Yeah.
Like, I just can't understand it. Like, you're shown every GAA game under the sun is on RT, and there's nothing against them. It's not us versus them, but look, this is third round Europe stuff. This is big boy stuff you're doing here. International players, the international manager is there watching. You're up against a good side for a chance to go into the playoff. Like, the crowd was good last night, probably not as good as it should have been either, because just the whole build-up, there's a complacency now about Irish teams in Europe that they've built up over the last couple of years, maybe Shamrock Rovers, but for RTÉ on the national broadcast, you've got to be showing these games. To build up the kind of look around the country and the league, it has to be shown, really.
They just come and go, these games. Mm. So if you have an LOI TV subscription, you're still adding on a tenner to watch the game last night, right? So a lot of people, a lot of sports fans, a lot of fans of our show who tune in every morning, they might have got that game in an article this morning. Oh, Clash Rovers won 4-0, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
And then it comes and goes because you haven't seen it in a world where you see everything now on your phone.
Yeah.
So that's going to be immediately forgotten. And I'm not trying to get all high and mighty, but like, oh, it's the growth of the game and all that, we should be watching every single game an Irish team plays in. It's just as simple as, like, there's an Irish team playing in Europe, it's a big game, there's a lot on the line, just show the game.
Yeah, like, this is the pinnacle for some lads as well. Like, you're playing in Europe in the third round. This isn't the case of we're playing some team from the Faroes in the first and you're not going to show it. This is third round stuff. Like, I don't know, obviously you've got obligations to show Spurs and PSG, but to glorify friendly.
Like, but that's fine. I don't mind them showing Spurs PSG at all.
I don't, but like, they've obviously obligations as well. And now when we do get into the next round and the qualifying rounds, the bigger broadcasters have rights to this, and I'm sure they will. Should Rovers get by Santa Clara, I'm sure the big boys will come in and want those things. But that's Shells and Rijeka Is it what a Croatian game. Champions League? Yeah. Who's that not been shown? Like, any other country has that front and centre. And that's the problem with this country.
Yeah, it's and it's and then you just they might have a tinge of regret the next morning because the Shells game was brilliant. Rovers was an unbelievable performance, and maybe the powers that be today might say, we should have shown that. But they do have another chance because it's next week now. So you have Shamrock Rovers against Santa Clara, and you have Shelburne against Linfield again. And but that is the game that they did show a few weeks ago.
Yeah,
that they just showed. It was brilliant. They just showed randomly a big production, and then they disappeared afterwards. And you wonder now, Barry, was like, is this making any dent at all? These complaints that we're making this week, will the powers that be make a decision, all right, we're going to show one, if not both of those games, and it feels like they're going to have to show both. They can't show one or the other. I don't trust them to do that.
I don't trust them because they were spouting out how much it costs to put on the first one. I think it's 50 grand or something to put on for the game against Linfield, the first game. They obviously didn't show the second one. It's only up the road. Like, when those kind of figures are being spouted out, you're thinking, there's obviously cost cutting or something here. They're weighing up whether it's right to show it or not. But this is your champions in a playoff round. If this game isn't shown, like, all the connotations around as well with Linfield,
yeah,
you've got to show it.
You heard people last night talking about the logistics of Santa Clara as well. I think it's that you have your nearly 3 hour flight to Lisbon, and you have to get the connection to Santa Clara, which is 2.5 hours, I think, from there out in the Azores. So, like, it's logistically a tough one, but as you say, these games have to be shown. Like,
well, just show the second leg then.
Yeah,
it's up in Tallaght. Like, it's set up for everything up there. Like, we've probably got the best of productions up there when it comes to LOI TV for Shamrock Rovers. It's easy for obviously there is a cost to it, but the cost benefit is there for all to see. And obviously a playoff round against the fifth team in Portugal,
yeah,
some recognised names for a chance to go into the Conference League stage. Like, it's phenomenal, really, what these teams are doing in Europe without the backing of these companies.
Yeah, 100%.
Anything to be said for a title race or a relegation battle in the Premier Division?
We've more chance of a relegation battle, I think, than Cork's shown a little bit of form now, I think.
Slightly, yeah. Waterford getting slightly into trouble a bit, yeah.
Yeah, Galway as well. Good result against Rovers. Yeah. Got the point, but falling down the table a little bit. And Cork a little bit resurgent now. 4 points in the last two games. But I don't see it either end. It's going to be the European races where it's going to be at. And you just look at the money that's involved in that now. That's going to be nearly the benchmark. It'll start to become a little bit like England, where it's all about getting into that top four, top five. And look at the riches that Rovers are getting now from going through a few rounds as well, and Shells as well. If you aren't in those top four or five, you're just falling behind every year in terms of money. Like,
definitely. Five games in the FA Cup third round today. Cork City, Waterford, Finn Harps, Bray, Salt Hill against Galway United will be a cracker. Bowes against Sligo Rovers, and Kerry against Cove Rambers. Barry Murphy, thanks a million.
Yeah,
cheers, Barry.
OTB Breakfast at UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate. Or Ben Light used to choose us to help you get back in action.